Your head will be centered. The river's just a bend.
Well, it's another week. This is Andrew Wood, Executive Director of Hope Resource Center. And today is an awesome day because today, anytime I get to bring in pastors and anytime I get to bring in friends and folks of the community that that we're kind of all serving alongside each other is a special day. So today we have Pastor Hunter Wright from Ignition Church, and we're going to talk about a number of things today. You know, obviously about kind of your, you know, what brought you to Knoxville. You're born and raised here, and then I think you left for a little bit and came back to Knoxville.
Right.
And so we're going to talk about that. We want to talk about adoption and the beautiful picture of adoption, and I want to focus on the local church. So Ignition and Ignition's heart for the people of this city. I mean, y'all meet every Sunday for your worship experience downtown in Knoxville. But also, you know, this weekend is special because it's Love Weekend, and the goal there is to love on the city. So let's just jump right into it because we only have an hour. And when you have two ministry folks, hour is probably never enough to talk through things.
One of them's a preacher.
And so there you go. And so let's just start from... Okay, born and raised in Knoxville, what has, kind of talk about your story, you know, where, as best you can, and then kind of leaving and then coming back and God bringing you back here to plant Ignition.
Yeah. I was actually technically born in Chattanooga, but I was here by the time the World's Fair kicked off.
So there you go.
That's all that matters
in
Knoxville.
That's true.
If you were here for the World's Fair, you are as... Knoxville as it gets.
That's right.
So I was here. I was there in a stroller, and so I was here by the time I was 2 years old. So I was raised in Knoxville. Knoxville's all I've ever known. And I think, like most teenagers, you don't really appreciate where you are. You don't really know what you have. You just want to get out. So I kind of remember not really making anything serious about, but making some vows, like I'm never going to come back to this city, you know. And I actually do remember even telling myself never was going to be in full-time ministry.
Right.
The church didn't impress me growing up. It didn't influence me. It didn't affect me. It kind of almost bored me and drove me away. Right. And I also said I was never going to go to graduate school, and God's got a great sense of humor.
Yep.
But really God's got a great sense of love and power because he changed me and all three of those things happened. So, long story short, I was coming back to visit my parents, like I did frequently. And this was soon after getting married, and was back in town just visiting my parents for a weekend. And I could tell that Knoxville was growing rapidly. This was about 10 years ago. And I just had this question that kind of hit me, what I felt like was out of nowhere. I'd never really even considered it before, but just this question of, I wonder what these people's experiences with God and what are they going to discover when they get here? Are they going to have a place to call home? Are they just going to run into religion, or are they going to discover the gospel, you know? And I began to wonder, is there anything happening here? Is there anything really even to keep up with the growth that's happening? And that question began to haunt me. It was a burden for sure. It was a gift of God in that sense. And so I went back to it. I was living in Atlanta at the time. My wife and I went back that weekend, and I remember I just began to kind of Google even and discover what was happening here in the city. Were there any church plants? What was going on? And it got heavier and heavier and heavier, and a question I couldn't eliminate. And I tried to convince a couple of friends of mine who I knew were from the area, hey, are you going back to Knoxville? Hey, I'll go with you, that type of thing. I didn't want to be the guy.
Right.
But I felt like there was this draw of I needed to get back. I needed to be part of the solution. I didn't know what that would look like, but I wanted to be back. I couldn't eliminate that burden. And over time, it just kind of became more and more clear it was going to need to be me. And there was a specific moment I can look back on a couple months after the heartbreaking incident where God made it really clear that it was a call to plant. And that was, I was reading in Isaiah 14, and I was actually doing a little bit of a small fast, not anything super spiritual, just lunch.
Right, right.
Fasting. I was actually for my pastor who was fasting at like full on. And so I was fasting kind of with him as much as I could. I was young at that game.
Sure, yeah.
So, it was the 14th day of that, and I was reading Isaiah 14, and there's a promise to God's people Israel, which extends to the church today, and it says, this is the plan determined for the whole world. This is the hand stretched out over all nations, for the Lord Almighty has purposed, and who can stop him? His hand is stretched out, and who can, you know, turn it back? And so it was like this promise that God's going to do what he's going to do with his church, with his children. He's going to gather them back together. He's going to grow this. And just something happened in my heart where I felt like God told me, I'm going to do this work in Knoxville. I'm going to do a work in Knoxville, and I want you to be a part of it. And so that promise really struck me, and I couldn't shake it. I remember I tried not to think about it for a couple of days, because I was a worship leader. I was actually in the process of making a record at the time, with the guys from Need to Breathe, mm-hmm. and some great things were happening, and this had been a dream of mine for years, since childhood, to be in the studio making a record of that quality, and it happened right around then. And I remember just being like, if this changes everything. And so I had to sit on that for a while. Like, I'm not just going to,
right,
you know, go with a whim, emotion that could have been, you know, could have been the burrito I ate the night before. Mm-hmm. So, but confirmations kept coming in, and then eventually I went to my pastor and said, hey, this is what I feel like is happening. And that was a church plant that I was serving at. And so he understood the call, and we talked it out. And so he gave me the blessing. And so I began to look at what it would look like to take next steps to get back here. And that involved seminary, and there was a whole crazy story there, where my mom had actually been saving for me to go to seminary since I was 15. I didn't meet Jesus, Andrew, until I was 17.
Wow.
So there was some stuff going on there, and that was a huge confirmation that, like, dang, this is part of what God has for me. And so I just knew, right? And so I kind of figured out what seminary I wanted to go to, and then needed to figure out, okay, where am I going to go to learn how to plant a church? Because the church I was a part of was a very small church plant, and it actually ended up kind of folding into another church. Mm-hmm. And so I kind of knew, well, I need to go somewhere that's doing really well, that's flourishing. And so we tried to figure out what that was going to look like, and eventually my wife and I ended up moving to Charlotte, North Carolina, to be a part of the movement that is Elevation Church in Charlotte. And we moved there, and we served there for 4 years while I was in seminary, and just learned and soaked it up. And eventually a lot of story happened around that. But I just went there to serve. I did not go there to bring people and steal guys and start my own thing. I just went there to serve and learn. And God, by a very natural process, built a team around us. And so we moved back here from Charlotte. So we went to Atlanta, Charlotte, where I studied, learned, and then came here with 14 people from Charlotte to start Ignition. That was 4 years ago, a little over 4 years ago. So we started in my parents' basement out in Farragut, and started talking culture and vision and just acquainting ourselves with the city again. I hadn't been here in 12 years, and it was growing at the rate of 60,000 people a year. Mm-hmm. So a lot was changing, and there was a lot of need, and we didn't really know where we were going to be. And so we kind of started and went to a chiropractic office, met at Exodus Chiropractic for a little while, and again, just meeting people in the city and trying to figure it out. And eventually, we ended up 2 years ago starting Sunday mornings at the Knoxville Convention Center, so right in the heart of downtown. And they've been great to work with. And, you know, people say you don't ever know that, they tell pastors this, that you don't know the church you're going to get until God gives it to you. You know, you can set out with all kinds of visions and ideas in your mind, but you just don't really know, you know, where God wants you and how he's going to use you in his grand plan in the city until you're into it. And so it's been a process of discovery over these past 4 years. And we love what God's doing and the unique fingerprint that he's given us here.
Yeah, and you know, it's interesting. You know, I've been in church my entire life, and you know, have some seminary. I didn't finish because we kept having babies and stuff, and it just that makes it a little hard.
Yeah.
But as I look through that, there was even part of me back in the day that would say, "Man, why are people planting churches in Knoxville? Why are people planting churches in the city?" And this, I guess I don't know if it's a sad truth or not, but the truth is there's a ton of broken people. Right. And there's a ton of people that need Jesus. And yeah. so you could have, and in a lot of places in the South, you do have a church building on every corner.
Sure.
But they're not busting at the seams. You know, people aren't beating down the door to get in.
Right,
and
right.
so, and then I've gone to places like Vermont, because there was a part of me at a time that really felt like we were being called to New England.
Right.
So, and I don't know why, but so I go to places like Vermont where there's no churches anywhere. And so, and that's what I love about church plants is it's people saying, not necessarily saying, hey, the other places are doing things the wrong way. It's just saying, look, there's a lot of people here that need to hear about Jesus. And
that's right.
so, if we're meeting downtown, let's meet the people that are there and let's take them Jesus. And so that's what I love about God calling people. And the fact that God told your mom at some point, hey, this is what I think you need to do for your son, because there's going to come a day.
Right.
And probably there was probably part of that going, well, why in the world am I going to put money away for that? He ain't even a believer, you know. But I do think it's amazing how God uses that.
Yeah.
And then from there, with what we see with the local church and being at Hope Resource Center, what we see is the outpouring of love and support from a number of different churches. And so that's what I love about partnering with the local church. What have you seen as you are leading and kind of walking through this? With staff, with volunteers, with the folks that are joining y'all every Sunday, what have you seen with the hearts of the people they've found Jesus, and now they're saying, okay, this news is too good to hold in. We need to start loving and serving those around us.
Yeah, absolutely. I think I came here with a picture in my mind of what I thought we were going to be like and the people we were going to reach. And where I thought they were going to be and what their need was going to be, but I didn't know really any of that. And so I thought we were going to run into a lot of just cultural Christianity here, and I thought it was going to be a pretty simple, like, hey, this is the gospel, and it was just going to be real quick. Like, once you hear it, you recognize a difference, and you're in. But what we ran into was a realization that, well, people may be familiar with the gospel, but the implications of the gospel 5-10 years into your relationship with Jesus look a little bit different. And I think we came here and discovered that there was a real need for authentic church, more so like the body of Christ living out the gospel more so than a better gospel presentation, if that makes sense. You know, so it's like, yeah, there's a lot of churches and there's a lot of churches being planted, and that's beautiful, but what's necessarily needed is not a better church experience, but the church being the church. And that's kind of what God challenged us on. And that was, so how do we be the church in this city? Not how do we do Sundays and do them better. Not that we do our Sundays bad. I think we do them pretty well. But it's been about discovering how do we really live like missionaries here and now. And I think one of the things that we've hit on is honestly, when you're in the church plant world, one of the things they tell you is, or that I heard a lot, at least coming out of big conferences like Catalyst and stuff, was just this real, and it's a good marker, at least organizationally speaking. But they would say stuff like, you know, you're going to be successful as a church if the volunteer in the parking lot can say the vision of your church. And it's like, okay, that's great, and that's good organizationally speaking. It's certainly great if you're a business. You know, you want your employees to know the vision of the church, but there's more than that at stake, you know, when you're a church plant, than somebody knowing the organizational vision, right?
Yeah, and I think, and we'll continue that after the break. Mm-hmm. But I think as we go forward, it's the, are we getting lost in the minutia and the just everyday and forgetting, again, that we talked about off air, that the tomb is empty.
Yeah.
And the cross is like, that's a big deal. That's more important than the vision.
Yeah.
Now, the vision's been put forth by the Lord himself. So we'll talk more when we come back.
What if you could go back and relive one day of your life all over again?
And we're back. It's Andrew Wood, Executive Director of Hope Resource Center, joined today by Pastor Hunter Wright of Ignition Church. And so we ended the last segment talking about the love of the city. And so as you're watching your the people that meet with y'all on Sundays and watching them then go out and love the city. I mean, this weekend you're doing Love Weekend. In the past, you've done Love Week.
Yeah.
What have you seen? Kind of what are the fruits of that right. you've seen? Not just for, you know, hey, the city has been impacted, but your people's been impacted through that.
Yeah. So, yeah, picking up, what we've discovered is that that if we can help people not just discover our vision as a church, but if we can help them discover the Holy Spirit, their gifts, and how what maybe is God's vision for their life through the church, then we feel like that's how we can influence the city the most, right? Not if we come in here and say, this is our vision, join our vision, do this thing, you know, and let's do this really well. But if we come in here and say, God, what do you want to do? Specifically, what do you want to do in this person's life? And like you were mentioning earlier, the Lord is the one who came up with the vision, make disciples who make disciples who make disciples, right? This multiplication thing. And so as we've tapped into that, we've discovered this, God's just building his church. It's really, really beautiful. And we're these people, our people in our community, as they're meeting the Holy Spirit and having this personal relationship with him, there's this crazy love that they've been given for people, that God's people, right? And we have broken hearts. That's the only way we have a couple of statements that we say at our church, and we call them the Heart for the House statements. And one of the first Heart for the House statement is, we cannot be explained apart from a broken heart. That there's this thing that happens when you meet Jesus and you begin to discover his presence in your life, his voice in your life. He'll do this thing, and he'll break your heart for people, break your heart for not just for causes, but for people, right? And we're seeing that happen over and over and over again with the people of Ignition, and they're discovering their own passion, and they're discovering this love, the way that they've been loved by the people of our church. They're wanting to go out and love. And so that's happening, just kind of like beyond our control. I mean, we're being intentional about it, and we're setting up the environment for that to happen, but it just keeps happening. God just keeps replicating that over and over and over again. And so without us having to do a ton of like outside in work, people are wanting to love other people. And so one of the things that we do is we have outreach partners that we partner with in the city, and Hope being one of them.
Sure.
And so we direct those passions, not just to bringing people to church and not just to making disciples, but we direct it to outreach partners and serving with others. And so a couple times a year, we do what we're doing this weekend, which is Love Weekend, where we just kind of cram a bunch of events into one weekend with several of our partners, just to highlight our partners so that the people of our community can say, oh, I'm passionate about that. I'm going to plug into that year round.
Yeah.
And Hope is who we're partnering with specifically this weekend, who we're highlighting this weekend. Right.
You know, and I think for me, it's and this took me some time to understand. And I think the Lord used that to kind of show me my weaknesses. And so for a large portion of my life, it was a focus on the issue over the people. And so for instance, I was passionate about this issue, so that is what I'm going to run with. Or I'm passionate about this issue, so I'm going to run with that one. Regardless of who's in the way, regardless of what what people are actually affected by that issue. And so, for instance, today I was on Twitter and I saw an Olympic athlete was being interviewed, and he was talking about his passion is obesity, and he wants to fight obesity in the world. Good. I'm all for it. Sure. It makes complete sense.
Absolutely.
Obesity is killing a lot of people.
Right, yeah.
Let's go after it. But here's where he lost me. And he said, for instance, do you know the two places in the world that are best at fighting obesity? And the interviewer was like, no, I'm stumped. Who are they? And he said, North Korea and Cuba. And the interviewer was like,
those are both communist countries.
Well, aren't they starving their people in North Korea? And he was like, well, they are. But, I mean, what you've seen is obesity has really dropped. And I'm going, okay, that's a person that says issues matter more than people. I mean, we want to fight these issues, but we don't want to starve people to reach our goal.
Right.
And so for me, it's looking at the community and that's what I love about your heart and the heart of the community, of your community, to say, look, yeah, well, there are things that we're passionate about, but we're never going to see those issues. We're never going to see our passions really culminate into anything if we neglect the people that are directly affected by those issues. Yeah. And so, don't let us ever start citing North Korea as an example of, well, I mean, you know, there, they don't have internet issues.
What would Kim Jong-un do?
Yeah. They don't have people addicted to television. Well, because they don't have televisions. Like, that's why. They don't. It doesn't mean that's a positive thing. So as you look to this weekend, and of course, I'll be joining y'all on Sunday and be speaking. Really looking forward to that. Appreciate the opportunity. But as you look to that, Hope isn't the only partner that you're connecting with. So what are some other partners that y'all are working with this weekend?
Yeah. Well, so we're working with you guys. We're working with CARM. We've been working with CARM since we got here. We are serving with, we're doing several projects with CARM actually this year, doing a donation project, and we're going there and serving breakfast where we love to interact with their clients, not just serve breakfast. And then this year we're also going to be picking up a new outreach partner in Habitat for Humanity. They're one of our newer ones. And so we're going to do a big blitz on Saturday as well. So.
Yeah, and is, you know, it's amazing what the gospel can do. There's a, and I'm sure you're familiar with the church in Austin Stone when I read, I don't know if it was his book. I think the pastor wrote a book. Mm-hmm. Anyway, Google it and you'll figure out what I'm talking about. But what he said was when he went into that community, that city, and looked around and said, okay, there's a lot of things. There's a lot of things going on here already that may not be Christian ministries, but are already nonprofits in place doing great work. And what he did, what Matt Carter did, was say, look, we're not going to reinvent the wheel.
Right, exactly.
We're going to, we want our people who love Jesus to flood these people that may not love Jesus.
Sure.
And volunteer and say, look, how can we help?
Right.
And what they saw was a transformation of the community of all these nonprofits who may or may not be Christian nonprofits. Yeah. Look, the bride is the church, not the nonprofit. And so we want to come alongside the bride, and how can we impact the community?
Yeah. I mean, we're better together, right? We're stronger, stronger in unity than we are, you know, in division. And so much more could be done if there was a partnership than competition, and especially when it comes to the nonprofit, the parachurch organizations. And so, yeah, we had the same exact idea and even same exact phrase when we came in here was, we're not going to reinvent the wheel.
Yeah.
You know, we're not going to pioneer, we're going to partner when it comes to outreach. And so we've been able to discover some great partners who are doing great work, specifically people who are loving people, not people who are, like what we were talking about before, who are more passionate for the cause than for the person. And that's one of the things that we found that we loved about Hope, was that you guys were about the person, not just the person in the womb, but even the mother, more importantly. And that's what took our hearts and said, we can get behind that. As people who have broken hearts for people, we can get behind a cause, and we want to partner with a cause financially and time-wise, you know, loving people.
Yeah. Amen to that. When we come back, we're going to talk about adoption and what that looks like for the right family. The right family, right?
Yep,
so
right.
We'll talk about that in a second.
Sometimes the world feels like a mess, full of drama, full of stress.
And we're back. It's Andrew Wood with Hope Resource Center, joined today by Pastor Hunter Wright of Ignition Church. So now I want to shift focus a little bit and talk about adoption. And so I know that you and your wife are looking at that and going through that process right now. So kind of take us on that journey briefly on what brought y'all to entertaining that and how God is using that in y'all's lives.
Yeah. Well, I would, you know, I think for me personally, I loved the idea of adoption early on, just because of its correlation with the gospel and God adopting us as His own. Which actually, I found out that the reason that God uses that terminology is not because we were not His to begin with or anything like that, but because actually the Hebrew understanding of adoption is the Jewish understanding of adoption is that you actually cannot forsake or disown an adopted child.
Absolutely.
You can do that with a biological, but you couldn't mm-hmm. with a... And so that's the reason God says, I'm adopting you, because in other words, I'll never forsake you. So that's beautiful. So I think early on, that was more kind of my interest in it, and I never really considered it personally. Now, when my wife and I got married, I think like most people, we had this plan of, well, we're going to wait, and we'll, you know, and then we knew we were going to plant the church. It was like, well, we need to wait a little bit longer to start our family because we don't want to, you know, have young kids while we're trying to plant a church, and, you know, just trying to be control freaks. Yeah. And we got here and felt like, okay, I think we're getting settled now. Let's start trying to have kids. And honestly, we felt like there was a release from God, a prompt from God. My wife did. And so we started trying, and nothing would happen. We'd try again, nothing would happen. And it started to get to where we're kind of like, okay, we're getting concerned here. We went to doctors and specialists, and we would do what they told us to do, and nothing would happen. We went to the whole, you know, homeopaths and holistic and all that kind of stuff. And everybody was always, we don't have any explanation for this. And so it's been a really, really dark road, a lot of suffering, a lot of mm-hmm. nights of just weeping and crying. And it's a dark journey that unless you've walked through infertility, it's really hard to understand it because of the way that it divides you as a person. Because there's this God-given desire to be fruitful and multiply mm-hmm. that you cannot get rid of, yet there's nothing you can do about it. It's not like it's just something that's like, well, not going to happen. I need to surrender that to the Lord and move on. You can't move on from that. You know, there's just inherent desire mm-hmm. to see. And so as long as you can't do that, you feel broken. So there's been a lot of darkness, and there's been a lot of grace in that too, in our own journey of that suffering producing great things in our ministry and great things in our marriage and in our relationship with the Lord. And so, but along that process, we began to consider, okay, so what would adoption look like for us? And, you know, I think at first you kind of talk about it just because it's like, is this how are we going to have a family? And, but we don't want to jump on it because it's, you know, a way to have children. And so we were patient about it. And then I think the big turning point was both independently, God spoke to us about it. I think for me, I was actually taking a couple of days away, just praying a full day away. And I felt God make a shift in my heart from an adopted child to this is my child.
Mm-hmm.
And it became very clear to me that adoption was legit, for lack of a better word,
right?
You know, that would be my child. And that shift happened in my heart, and I was like, okay, I'm okay with that. I get that, you know, makes sense. I'm in, you know. And just my heart began to break for that, like, right. Okay, wow, I'm gonna go get my child now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and independently of me, you know, and it was actually a little while later, but independently, because I began to pray for my wife. I wasn't going to just go home and tell her, like, hey, we're supposed to, like, right, that's just not, it's a journey. And so I began to pray, okay, God, will you show that to my wife? And of course, he already had that in mind. But anyway, a couple months later, she had her own independent moment with the Lord. She's actually in a counseling session with a counselor walking through this infertility journey. And just kind of as she was processing something out loud, the Holy Spirit spoke to her, and she left that day just like, overwhelmed with the understanding that that's God's plan for our family. And that certainly didn't solve all of our problems or anything like that, but that was the start of our adoption journey. And that was about 2 years ago at this point. So then it's been a long road since then of, okay, discovering how do you do this,
mm-hmm.
the paperwork pregnancy, as they call it, where it's just hours and hours of paperwork trying to figure this out, raising a bunch of money, because unfortunately adoption is crazy expensive.
Right.
And it's been the same time we've discovered a real beautiful community, with adoption, and, because it does require a lot of support to go mm-hmm. through it. So, we've discovered some great people and great help along the way. And, so we're about 2 years into this thing. We just completed what they our home study a little while ago, and we have our profile book, which is basically like a scrapbook of your life that gets presented to birth moms, those cases, and we're working with a couple of different agencies actually around the country. So every, you know, couple of weeks or so, we'll hear about a case, and we'll decide if we're going to present. Which is a whole journey in of itself, trying to discover how do you choose whether or not you're going to present to a case. And so it's crazy, man. It's an up and down journey. You know, there's days where you feel broken, and then there's days where you feel chosen, you know, because you're discovering something of the heart of God that, you know, you feel like is very unique. And you're fighting for your child, which is, again, some days feels like, yeah, I'm a warrior. Other days it's like, I don't really want to do this.
Yeah.
You know? So yeah, but, most days, it's encouraging.
Yeah. And you know, we have such an opportunity, as a really, as a church to lead the way in the adoption stories of so many people, not just in their spiritual adoption, but I mean, like there's a lot of kids that need to be adopted in this country and around this world. And so I, you know, Russell Moore was speaking at the Evangelicals for Life event in D.C., and he's got a number of adopted kids, and he says people will come up and say, "So which one's your real child?" You know, and he's like, "Well, they're all real.
Yep.
First off, they're all real. They're not fake children. And so second, they're all mine."
Yep.
And he says, you know, his heart initially wants to like attack and say, "Look, you know, this is don't say that to me. This is my child."
Right.
But he, those are moments again to help help folks understand what's going on. And so this is what I mean when I talk about semantics and the words and the phrases that we use as a church. You know, when we got pregnant with our third child, and we had a very tough time, difficult time getting pregnant with our first child. And so, but when we got pregnant with our third, people would say things like, you know how that happens, or, you know, those things. And I'm like, well, first off, we're grown and married, so of course we know how that happens. Second off, this is something we should celebrate, not shame a married couple because they're wanting to have multiple kids. It's not something to shame us about. That's something that we need to be celebrating about. And so, and also in the same vein, that's where it can be dangerous to look at a married couple and say, "So when are you going to have kids?"
Right.
Not knowing that you've been trying for 4, 5, 6 years. And so those are minor things, but it's such an opportunity to truly love someone by saying, "Look, you know, is there anything I can do?
Yeah.
Is there any way I can help?"
Right.
And then on top of all that, we have birth moms that are so brave that are saying,
"Yep.
I love this child so much that I want to create this plan for this child that's going to allow this child to flourish."
Yes.
And that's even for someone that does this work every single day, that is so difficult for me to wrap my head around.
Right.
But it is such a beautiful picture. And I've seen birth moms speak on these topics and talk about the decision that was made. And I saw one speak specifically, and she got pregnant very young. And she said throughout her pregnancy, once she made that adoption plan, she said, "I can't believe I'm getting to carry so-and-so's baby." Mm. And then when she had the child and had that moment with the child, she said part of her plan was, "I want complete alone time with the baby."
Yes.
And she said she remembered looking down at the child and going, "I can't wait for your mom to see you." And just that floored me, because I'm sitting there going, you know, how do you do this? And, you know, kids that are in the foster care system, kids that that need homes, that want homes, that desire homes. And that's messy. And yes, they may have some struggles. They may have some issues. But loving people is messy. Yeah. It is a messy world that we live in.
Right.
But it is such a beautiful picture of the gospel to say that even on top of that, you know, I always tell people that, and I tell my kids this, that God chose me and my wife,
right,
out of everybody to ever walk the face of this planet, to be the parent to Gavin, Summer, and Evelyn.
Yeah, right.
And so that's a beautiful picture. Mm. But in adoption, that's the same picture.
Right.
That God chose, whatever child y'all end up with,
Right.
God said, the plan for this child is
right.
this.
Yeah.
And Hunter and his wife are going to
yes.
parent this child. Right. And that's such a – when you start to grasp and understand the truly resting in the sovereignty of God that orchestrates mm-hmm. and creates, and then you start to understand what mm-hmm. – what David was meaning when he was saying, who am I that you're mindful of me?
Right, like, right.
Wow, you know, yeah. It's yeah, such I mean, a beautiful
we've,
picture.
We've discovered that adoption is a gift in that regard, and it's a gift of grace, whereas God may not at this point have chosen to remove the barrier of infertility. He has given us this gift of adoption, you know, and it's a gift.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a replacement. It's not a plan B. It's a gift. It's a redemption, you know. It's a gift of grace in the midst of our struggle, in the midst of brokenness that is this world. There's a gift of grace called adoption yep. that is a gift for us, you know. Yes, is it for the child? Yeah. But, you know, for us, we're not going out and rescuing some poor child.
Right, right.
You know, and again, that's, I think that's another the ignorance thing that happens. People think like, oh, yeah, heroes to you as you're going mm-hmm. and rescuing like, no, I mean, it's a gift all around.
Yep.
And there's amazing stories that happen between birth moms and adopted parents. And
what's been amazing for me to watch that unfold is I think we're entering a place in society and culture where we are we're doing more to celebrate the decision
yeah.
of adoption. Whereas I think, you know, people will come to me and say, what do you mean y'all haven't seen a lot of adoptions? Why don't they just pick adoption? I'm like, mm-hmm. well, that's a heavy decision to
yes.
make. Very heavy. It's just as heavy as the other decisions.
Right.
And so it's not that simple.
No.
But what we have kind of done, and when we celebrate adoption, we also then look at those that choose adoption and go, how can you choose adoption?
Ugh.
Why don't you just parent that child? And so we're in one area we're saying we're celebrating adoption, and the other we're shaming those that choose adoption. Mm. But what I think we're seeing is we're starting to see where these birth moms are seeing that they're being supported and, right. and open adoption has become more of a norm
right.
than not. And that's a beautiful picture.
It
and
is.
We'll finish up when we come back.
You're restoring me piece by piece. There's nothing to dirty.
And we're back. It's Andrew Wood, Executive Director of Hope Resource Center. Today I've been joined by Pastor Hunter Wright of Ignition Church. And like I said earlier, I will be joining Ignition Church this Sunday. And it's going to be a great Sunday to just celebrate the gospel, celebrate what God is doing, what God's doing through Ignition, what God's doing through Hope, and looking forward to that. So would certainly invite you out for Sunday morning. But tell folks how they can find Ignition Church. So not just physically,
right.
you know, by Sunday meetings, but how can they find y'all online and in other areas?
Yeah. So ignitionchurch.com or at Ignition Church on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. And that's where you'll find all about us. We are, Sunday mornings at 10:30 a.m. in the Knoxville Convention Center, right below the big golden ball,
mm-hmm.
Sun Sphere. And yeah. That's where we are. We said that we exist to love God, love people, and love our city. So we love loving people.
Yeah, and so I would encourage you to look them up and at the very least pray for Ignition Church and pray for Pastor Hunter and his wife through the adoption journey that they're currently on and just pray that God would move in this city, not just through
yes.
Ignition, but through all the
right.
churches that are here and through different church plants that are coming
yep.
and replants and revitalization and
yeah.
all the things that are occurring in this city as what we're seeing across the board is the Lord in his sovereignty
mm-hmm.
who commands us to go and tell all the nations in his sovereignty has brought all the nations to us.
Right.
And so not just in this country, but in Knoxville, we
right.
have a lot of folks here that are from all parts of the world. And so, that's not a political statement. That is me saying there are people here that are from
mm-hmm.
all the nations.
Yeah.
And so if we believe the Bible has told us to go to the nations,
right.
well, guess what? You can go down the street a lot
mm-hmm.
of times here in Knoxville. And so I would encourage you to pray for the local church in this community and what's being done here. And
yeah.
And just come out and hear about them and learn about them online and visit them. I think all your audio messages are on the website. Is that correct?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, we do post all of our sermon every week, usually about Monday afternoon on ignitionchurch.com/sermons. But yeah
there you go. And so I think it's if you're like me and you just always want to hear something, and so I always want some kind of something going on. So when I'm mowing, I'm listening to some type of podcast or sermon. It's a great way to really and to also get connected with churches around the community. So even though you may say, "Well, I'm a member here or a member there," that doesn't mean you throughout the week you can't listen to other messages. Yeah. And so I would encourage you to do that as well. Anything to any series that are coming up, anything that you want to highlight? Hey, in the next few weeks, we're going to be touching on this. We're going to be focusing on this.
Yeah, so we're doing Love Weekend this weekend. Excited about that. Then the very next weekend, we're starting a series called What in the World Does God Want Me to Do?
There you go. And so if you've been asking that, what in the world does God want me to do? You should go. You should at the very least listen to the sermons when they come out. So, Hunter, we are thankful for you. We're thankful for Ignition. We're thankful that God, through his sovereignty, it's almost like he knows what he's doing, brought you back to Knoxville. Yeah. We're thankful that he told your mom back in the day, hey, put some money away for seminary for your non-saved sons, right?
That's what this kid's going to need it.
And so we're thankful for that. And just on behalf of Hope, we're thankful for your partnership and for the heart of Ignition for the people of this city. And so what we know without a doubt through your financial gifts, through your prayers, through your partnership, lives have literally been saved out of Amen. The womb, and lives have spiritually been saved with moms seeing that they have value and that people love them. And so Amen. We're thankful for you. We're thankful for what you do. And let's do this again sometime. Let's talk more about Jesus and what he's doing in the city of Knoxville. We'll be back next week. Talk to you soon.
Lift your head, weary sinner. The river's just a down the path of forgiveness, salvation's waiting.